You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's talk about the news. A hot take, a sizzling take from Roger Stone on Sean Hannity last night. Here's Roger.
When you go through something like this, Sean, you find out who your real friends are and who the people are who really never were your friends. You have been a tremendous friend. And also Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida, who I hope to live long enough to see in the White House. He was a great friend who never gave up in trying to make sure everybody understood the injustice that I had been through.
There is only one presidential campaign I'm worried about, and that is the election of Donald Trump in 2020. But I appreciate the kind words from Roger. I'm glad he did not serve in prison for process crimes born of a bizarre and really improperly predicated Mueller probe.
As they got closer and closer to having to issue the Mueller report, and they realized that they had no Russian collusion, because there was no Russian collusion, it was a hoax. On July 24th, Jeannie Rhee, who was heading my prosecution within the Mueller team, she made it very clear to one of my lawyers, after a hearing she asked to see him privately, that if I would re-remember certain phone conversations I had with candidate Trump, if I would come clean, if I would confess, that they might be willing to, you know, recommend leniency to the judge. Perhaps I wouldn't even serve any jail time. And I didn't have to think about it very long. I said, absolutely not. There was no circumstance under which I would bear false witness against the president. I was just not willing to lie.
It's good to see Roger out from under gag order. It's good to see Roger out from under the threat of a prison sentence. And I hope we'll be hearing a lot more from Roger Stone in the coming days and weeks. Trump won't like this. Is the 2020 GOP convention in Florida doomed? That is the headline from the National Interest's Rachel Buccino. And the premise of the story is that there are five Republican senators who will not be attending the convention. Chuck Grassley, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Lamar Alexander. And I guess Senator Ron Johnson also said he may not attend. Here's my hot take. Who cares? I mean, does anyone really think that, like, the make-or-break moment at the Republican National Convention for someone is going to be, like, whether or not they get to post their picture with Lamar Alexander to the gram? Like, do you really think that the ability to win or lose this election is dependent on Lisa Murkowski attending the Republican convention? I think somehow we'll be able to have a good time without her. And it's not to say that there aren't good folks on this list. I mean, my gosh, Chuck Grassley, Ron Johnson, they've been absolute lions for the Trump agenda in the Senate. But I don't know that they're like the two people that everyone's going to see. You know who people want to see at the Republican convention? The fighters. They want to see Jim Jordan.
Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? The president, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Lindsey's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about, as far as I know.
And President,
there was no reason for
and
it.
President Zelensky never made an announcement, and you're their star witness.
They want to see Ted Cruz.
You know the consequence of their attacking, demonizing, defunding the police? The consequence will be a lot more black lives will be lost, and a lot more white lives and Hispanic lives. You pull the police back, and those, especially that those who live in low-income neighborhoods, are going to find themselves the victims of much more violent crime. And this is wrong. I'll tell you, I stand with the NYPD. I stand with the men and women of law enforcement across this country.
They want to see, you know, the, I think, Lee Zeldin type folks.
This impeachment started when the president was first elected. I remember being there when the president was getting sworn in. Pennsylvania Avenue was lined up while the president's hand was on the Bible with signs that said impeach him now. They won the House by pledging to resist, oppose, impeach, and obstruct everything and anything. It's about an enraged liberal activist base that they want to appease.
They don't want to see, you know, folks like Collins and Murkowski who are barely with the president, like, you know, Lamar Alexander. I think the last time Lamar Alexander was like a relevant figure at a Republican convention, he was running against Bob Dole, of all things, for president in that flannel shirt that he used to wear. So I hope our octogenarian and septuagenarian senators stay safe. We don't want any ill to fall their way. But I think that we'll be able to have a convention, renominate the president, and prepare our party for victory while they are resting and preparing for their time in Washington. Black Lives Matter is no longer a black-owned enterprise, it seems. Breitbart's Joshua Kaplan, with an explosive piece on the extent to which George Soros has engaged in a leveraged buyout of the Black Lives Matter movement. The piece entitled George Soros Pouring $220 Million into Racial Justice Movement. And it outlines a series of groups that are going to get these five-year grants from Open Society, which is George Soros's political financial distribution system. And he will essentially be the loud voice. He will be the operator, the financier, the principal drive behind what I think these groups are doing that he's giving, you know, many hundreds of millions of dollars to. So I guess we now know that the Black Lives Matter movement was so appealing that it was an acquirable asset for George Soros. What that means for our politics or the direction of that movement or its engagement in electioneering and other types of political activity, I guess we would just have to follow the Soros pattern, which is certainly not an enviable one. If politics makes strange bedfellows, then the desire to end these forever wars that have drained a generation makes some of our alliances downright peculiar. I have jointly penned an op-ed with fellow Congressman Ro Khanna. Ro is a liberal Democrat from Silicon Valley. He was the national co-chair of the Bernie Sanders campaign. And most folks know me as a pretty conservative, populist, libertarian-leaning Republican. And Ro and I work together frequently on issues of war and peace because we do not believe America is at her best when she is overextended and over-deployed to places in the world where victory is not able to be clearly defined. And our concern is about a provision, actually two, that are in the National Defense Authorization Act. And I'll quote you from the piece we submitted to the Daily Caller, and we'll put this out on social media as well. After awakening from a deep slumber on war and peace, Congress is erecting new roadblocks to prevent our troops from returning home. And the piece continues, the House Armed Services Committee included in its annual defense bill two measures restricting the president from withdrawing troops abroad. These amendments would handcuff the administration from bringing our troops home from Afghanistan and Germany without first certifying a dizzying maze of stipulations. The piece cites a number of circumstances where both Republicans and Democrats, from President Bush to President Obama, were trying to bring troops home from some of these places, and it continues, fortunately, a re-energized coalition of progressives and conservatives is galvanized to bring our troops home. One of us is one of the president's leading critics, and the other one of his closest allies. We are united in our conviction that Congress should lead efforts to disentangle our troops from bloody and costly endless wars. And I know that's a position that President Trump holds because it is a position he is continuously and very reliably articulated over the last 30 years. And so we have a president who wants to end these wars. We have a coalition in the Congress that includes some of the most vocal left-wing populists and some of the most vocal right-wing populists. So we should be able to get this done. We should be able to end the war in Afghanistan. Our country deserves it. Our troops have more than sacrificed for this conflict. And as a great nation, we ought to bring it to a close and ensure that we deprive terrorists of their ability to platform attacks from the skies above. You know, rubble makes no trouble. Death from the skies. The president has shown how That is a capable deterrent both with Soleimani and with Syria. It is time to deploy the Trump doctrine in Afghanistan. Southern Living Magazine is not a periodical we often cite on the podcast, but nonetheless, a very interesting article that we get from Andrea Romano that is entitled, "A Short Walk on the Beach Can Improve Your Mental Health, Study Suggests." And in this piece, they walk through a study that really tracks the improved endorphins, improved mental outlook, improved attitude that you get with something called blue spaces. I guess we're familiar with green spaces, open fields, parks, meadows, but blue spaces are areas of water, whether it's a lake, a stream, an ocean. And I'll confess this, I love going out on the beach. I love living in a coastal community. And there is a reason why all throughout human history, people have gravitated toward clean water, because there's something good about it for us. Not only just the survival element, but I think the mental health element as well. And with the way the workforce is changing in the wake of coronavirus and diffusion of human talent around the country and just greater telecommuting trends that we saw even before coronavirus, I think this is a really important point, because now major companies, even small companies, are going to be working to recruit talent digitally and at a distance. And so people are going to be able to basically live wherever they want to live and then pipe in on a web video, utilize a shared document service, and get their work done. And so where are people going to live? Well, I don't think that it's going to be bunching up in the cities. You know, I wouldn't be too bullish about like New York penthouse real estate right now. I think people are going to want some spaces. I think they're going to want to be near water. And so if you live in a community like mine that has the natural beauty, matter of fact, a Great Beach State Park in my district was named this last year to be the number one beach in the continental United States, and I think maybe even beyond. But what you're able to do by leveraging those natural assets and beauties is attract high-income people to your area. And so instead of like going out and building the next warehouse, building the next industrial plant, building the next tech center for people, how about as local communities, we just embrace the notion of keeping America beautiful, keeping her from falling filthy, ensuring that we have clean water, clean air, green spaces, blue spaces to enjoy. And it's my expectation that communities that really strive for, I think, the best version of themselves will attract the best workers and the best citizens, regardless of where their corporate headquarters may be. I really think that we're going to see more and more diffused human capital. And I think the communities that get on the front edge of that and understand that people are going to want things like walks on the beach and other like mental health enhancements, they'll be the communities that will be on the leading edge of economic development and talent recruitment in the years to come. The NBA is full of a bunch of hypocrites. They want to act like they're embracing this great social justice movement, that they're on the side of the downtrodden, but they don't seem to have that view when it negatively affects their pocketbook and their relationship with the Chinese Communist Party. Fox News has a great piece out by Joseph Wolfson entitled "NBA Raises Eyebrows for Not Allowing Customers to Print Free Hong Kong on Custom Gear."
So for the number, we'll just do number one. That's it. And for the name, there's going to be no spaces of any kind. It's FreeHongKong. No spaces. One word.
So I'll repeat the name one more time. Is it Free Hong Kong? That's what you want?
With no spaces, correct.
Yes, sir. Unfortunately, sir, the customization is not going through. It says we are unable to customize this item with the text you have entered. Please try a different entry.
So it won't let you put Free Hong Kong on it?
Yes, sir. It's not letting me to proceed further. I have tried twice, but it's not letting me do anything.
So the way this works is through the NBA's digital platform, you can go on, select a jersey, select a number and then, you know, put your own name or put your nickname. And so people were wanting to put Free Hong Kong on the jerseys. And I suspect that's half political message and probably at least half troll of the NBA's relationship with the Chinese Communist Party, their willingness to utilize talent there to their benefit and China's benefit, co-marketing. And it's really about accessing the buying power that China has among their populace. But that should not come at the cost of people's rights, especially when the NBA is doing everything they can to virtue signal that they're the new woke league on a variety of fronts. So whether it's the players who want to be critical of the president and want to be critical of law enforcement, want to be critical of Republicans, whether it's media figures like Adrian Wojnarowski writing profane emails back to Josh Hawley, or whether it's the league itself doing these deals and, you know, being a partner in China's ongoing domination of its people, because that's what you do when you enrich the Chinese Communist Party. You can put it any other way. You can act as if there's some separation between the business interests and the political interests of an oppressive regime, but there are not, and particularly in this case. That is who China is. They are not like us. They have been authoritarian for quite some time, and it's my expectation that they're going to continue that trend, especially if they get an alley-oop from the NBA. Thanks so much for listening to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz, and it's an honor to be on the podcast platform with you. One platform you will not find me on is the TikTok platform. President Trump should ban TikTok in the United States. TikTok is a Chinese mechanism to collect intelligence on Americans and use it. But until TikTok's banned, until we take that action, I know we'll be on almost every social platform so that we can keep sharing the truth of the American people. So make sure you subscribe, give us that 5-star rating, help others hear what we're sharing. It's been a great show. We'll be back tomorrow with more Hot Takes.